You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
One of New Zealand's most famous and most significant artists, Robert Ellis, passed away last week. Ellis contributed a prominent body of art and was crucial in promoting Māori art forms and bringing pop art to the fore of New Zealand's creative scene. His art was known to tackle a number of social, cultural, and environmental themes and utilised a range of mediums, including paint, stained glass, and tapestries. I spoke to the University of Auckland's Linda Taylor about Robert Ellis, his legacy, and the impacts his work has had on New Zealand culture. To begin, I asked Linda to tell me a bit about who Robert was.
Robert Ellis worked at Elam, at the School of Fine Arts, in painting and also design for 37 years. He made an amazing contribution during his time there and really was quite revolutionary in what he did in terms of introducing modern ideas, really putting design and industrial design and those aspects on a more professional footing.
What are some of the things that he really reinvented, things that he pushed for in the art community in Auckland and in New Zealand?
When he arrived in New Zealand, there wasn't really much of the gallery network or places that artists could exhibit their work. There was Auckland equivalent of the Society of Arts, and then there was the public gallery, the Auckland Art Gallery, and there was nothing in between, so that made it really difficult. And he kind of got himself onto the Council of the Auckland Society of Arts and really agitated for them to update their ideas about what constituted good painting. And that meant that artists that worked in abstraction and who were developing more avant-garde and more out there sort of practices got a chance to have their work shown. And if you could show at the Auckland Society of Arts, that means that you could sell your work as well. So it became a bit more viable to pursue the arts as a profession.
Was there much backlash within the art community? Because I know it's quite a, well, at least at that point, it was quite highbrow. It was people who were really into specific things.
Yeah.
His push for modern art and pushing for a more public focus, did it get much backlash?
There were conservative elements, and particularly people who felt that the academic route, you know, doing lots of life drawing and concentrating on the figure and those sorts of things were the only ways in which to develop your skills as an artist. And he wasn't anti that kind of academic tradition at all, but what he really felt was that the things that he'd understood and learned from his years in working in the Royal College in London was that you could work in a more political and conceptual way and develop ideas. So it didn't really matter what you were doing in terms of your practice. It could be sculpture or painting or whatever. But if you worked on your ideas and developed them conceptually, then you could be sure to communicate to your viewers. So it was really, his focus was all about how people could sustain a practice conceptually rather than just learning skills. Do you see the difference? It's kind of, it was less about practicing and getting the facility and more about having the ideas and being able to communicate them visually.
Yeah, totally. It makes perfect sense. And for present day, his impact on art in Auckland and New Zealand, is this something that we can see around the city in the art scene, in communities and in galleries?
Well, he was one of the first artists to pioneer a bicultural approach, and really after his marriage, well, he was very interested in Māori culture, and he, because he spent a lot of time in the north, he was able to kind of study at first hand meeting houses. He became very interested in some of the Ratana meeting houses up there, and consequently he got to do things like a carving school with the master carver Pine Taiapa, which meant that he had got really steeped in the tikanga of carving practice and, you know, how to approach Māori imagery and ideas with some integrity and respect. And he began, after his marriage to Elizabeth Mountain, then he, you know, he kind of was totally accepted into the Rāwhiti community as one of their own, and he worked on the meeting houses and became really interested in communicating that vision, that sort of holistic vision of conservation of ecology and all of the things that were part of Māori tikanga.
Was this something that had been done much before, merging Pākehā and Māori art forms?
You could say that somebody like Gordon Walters, whose wife, Margaret Orbell, edited the Māori Te Ao Hau, which was the magazine sponsored by the Department of Māori Affairs. You could say that he did that with his koru motif in the 1960s. But he wasn't Māori and neither was she, so he didn't really have that privileged insight into philosophies and ideas that were part of Mataranga Māori. So although he could look at them academically and look at the way in which op and pop art in London were abstracting forms from other cultures and stylising them to get, you know, towards abstraction, that wasn't what Robert Ellis was interested in. He was really interested in the spirituality behind the ideas, and particularly in the Māori language. So he often used te reo in his paintings and in his titles. He would always have the date, the place. It was all a very site-specific and all very localised.
So was it as much about the culture, about the history, as it was about the art for Robert?
Definitely. By the time in the 1980s that he was producing his huge paintings, which were about, you know, the ideas of in the north, he was working on a scale wanting to try and absorb people into the whole kind of philosophy of the deep culture and history of place. And I think he was of the opinion that it didn't matter where you were in the world, you could make up-to-the-moment contemporary art, which was about your location, and not be a provincial. You could be part of the whole international art conversation as long as you treated the materials and the ideas that you were representing with respect. So I think that's, he was one of the first artists as a Pākehā, as an immigrant even, to really understand that and to be totally accepted for what he did.
And his work with Māori, do you think it had much of an impact? Because especially it was in a time where there wasn't so much Māori art, Māori cultural stuff in mainstream media. Do you think his work had an impact on bringing Māori culture, Māori art to the fore in New Zealand?
Oh, definitely, because he had, you know, massive commissions at Auckland Airport and the arrivals terminal. The two artists that were chosen were Ralph Hortiri and Robert Ellis. So he did a huge mural that everybody saw coming into New Zealand. So, you know, his work was absolutely seen as being of this place and representing, you know, biculturally both cultures. And then he did a huge tapestry for the Aotea Centre. So that visual imagery and the te reo words, arepa, omega, alpha and omega, and those ideas he really pushed to the fore. And I think he was quite pioneering in that when, you know, there wasn't a lot of interest.
I guess moving on, because I guess that was in his earlier to middle career in the art scene, what was his involvement later on in his later years, especially to do with University of Auckland and to do with Auckland in general?
Well, he's a huge mentor to many, many artists, and who all remember him tremendously fondly for his incredible kindness and affection. And he promoted and kind of facilitated the careers of so many. For example, Billy Apple, the artist who was in New Zealand as Barry Bates, he really recognised his ambition, so he made sure that he was able to facilitate him going to the Royal College of Arts, which is where Robert Ellis himself had studied. So he had those connections. He was able to facilitate any student who wanted to go on to work in England. He was able to do that, and he really had an insight. He kept up with all his former students. So he was able to create that kind of flight path, if you like, for young New Zealand artists emerging out of Elam who wanted to go on overseas.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.